Welcome. My name is Erin Brooks, and I'm the Vice President of Community Employee Engagement at Suffolk Construction. Suffolk is the largest building construction company in the Northeast, headquartered here in Roxbury, with offices also in Florida and in California. And I'm honored to be your host for this session. As a significant player in a male-dominated industry, we at Suffolk Construction believe wholeheartedly in supporting the advancement of women leaders, not only at our company, but throughout our entire community. At Suffolk, we provide volunteering, mentoring, directed learning opportunities, amongst other initiatives, to the talented women at our organization. We're thrilled to partner with the Massachusetts Conference of Women, and our combined mission is to increase the visibility and representation of women in leadership roles by providing them with the tools and empowering them to make their mark at their companies, in their careers, and in the community. If you take a moment to look around the room today, you will see a group of very talented, capable women. This is a tremendous opportunity for all of us to make connections, build relationships, and learn from some of these very accomplished women about how they got to where they are today. I'm thrilled you're here to participate in this session, a conversation with Sophia Amoroso, tips on how to become your own girl boss. And I'm excited to announce our two speakers for today. Sophia Amoroso is the founder and executive chairman of Nasty Gal, the fastest growing online retailer in the country. Amoroso is the creative visionary, modern day entrepreneur, and fashion leader who has forged an unprecedented path in building a brand. Amoroso recently released her paperback edition of her New York Times 18-week bestseller, Girl Boss. It's part memoir and part business book with an edge. On March 27th of this year, Amoroso opened Nasty Gal's second retail store on the 3rd Street Promenade in Santa Monica with 6,500 square feet of retail space, almost three times as large as the brand's flagship brick and mortar, which opened only a year prior on Melrose Ave in LA. At only 31 years old, Amoroso has become one of the most prominent figures in retail and a true cultural icon. Nasty Gal first sparked a cult following in her one-woman vintage venture on eBay. And in just 5 years, the brand has grown into a one-stop shop and online retail haven with a progressive following of fashion risk-takers and well over $100 million in revenue. With relentless obsession over all things web and social media, she has propelled her brand's unforgettable aesthetic on every channel, including 1 million followers on Facebook and 1.2 million followers on Instagram. On the heels of Nasty Gal's success, Amoroso is passionate about evolving her brand and her team of creative mavericks in every way possible. As she continues to be deeply involved in every single aspect of her business, she loves most to meet the girls who have inspired Nasty Gal to be one of the most coveted brands of our time. Antoinette Antonio, who will also be joining us today, is co-anchor of News Center 5's Weekend Eye Opener newscast. Antonio is paired with Jim Loki for the Weekend Eye Opener, as well as Saturday and Sunday 8 a.m. newscasts. Antonio joined WCVB in June 2013, where she was the morning and noon anchor. She joined KOB-TV in 2005, starting out as a general assignment reporter. Antonio began her broadcast career in 2003 as a morning news anchor and general assignment reporter at KWES-TV in Odessa, Texas. While in Albuquerque, she covered everything from wildfires to floods to snowstorms to hot air balloon crashes. And most notably, she interviewed then-Senator Barack Obama during a campaign stop in New Mexico. She was part of several team breaking news awards from the New Mexico Broadcasters Association. Antonio also received a first place award by the Associated Press in Texas for best sports story, as well as a first and second place award for anchoring and reporting. A native of Orange County and a graduate of University of California, Irvine, Antonio also earned degrees in English and international studies. She's a member of the Asian American Journalists Association. So without further ado, I would like to introduce Antonio and Amoroso. And Sophia Amoroso.
Sophia, have a seat. Hi, guys. Is this working?
I think so. Can everyone hear us okay? All right. Wow, look at this crowded room. This is so exciting to be here. Give one more round of applause for the lovely Sophia Marusso. It is so good to have you here, and I've got to say, when I learned that I was moderating this, I thought, Sophia is this amazing fashion maven. What do you wear to something like this? And I figured, you know what, forget it. Everyone's going to be looking at her, and I've got to ask.
J-Lo. Crazy jumpsuit.
Is this Kristen of Nasty Girl?
It is. It's like the only one. It's like a sample that I stole off a rack.
Okay, so you're getting a preview.
I got on a flight. I was like, I better wear Nasty Gal.
Well, it looks fabulous, and thank you so much for being here and flying all the way from California. Let's start off. I know a lot of people here have a lot of questions about everything under the sun, from your website, your business, your social media brand, the book, the radio show. There's so much that you have your hand in right now. But let's go back to your beginning, the start of Nasty Gal. And I've read up and heard that you got your start in a very unconventional way. You were selling items on eBay, and in some cases,
they were illegitimately procured. That was way before I started Nasty Gal, so I just want to be clear that it wasn't like, I'm selling stolen stuff, and now I'm selling stuff that's not stolen. Woohoo! The birth of Nasty Gal. So I was like a teenager who was really angry at capitalism, and I thought like I could take down the system by like not contributing to it, and that I like had all the right in the world to like take shit for free, which is just like so dumb and not sustainable, and I learned that the hard way.
But again, so that's not advice.
I was a teenager, and so but I did learn the wrong way that I had an entrepreneurial spirit, I guess, which it didn't hit me right away. Like, wow, this is it. Like, I sold some stolen book on eBay, and now I'm gonna launch Nasty Gal. It was many, many jobs and failures and an application to art school and no financial help, and then a job in a lobby later that I found. I guess I found vintage on eBay. Mm-hmm. So I was already wearing vintage clothing, and I was sitting in the lobby. I worked at the Academy of Art University in San Francisco, which is in just this art, like for-profit art school that you don't need a portfolio to get into. It's actually a pretty good school. But I worked in the lobby, and I was a campus safety host. I was 22. So this was, it's now been over 9 years since I was piddling around in this lobby getting friend requests from eBay sellers who were building their following for their eBay vintage businesses on MySpace. So this was before Facebook had really taken off. And I clicked through, and I saw the kind of auctions that they were, the kind of prices they were getting at auction. And these are people who are choosing to pay that much. It's not like, hey, I think this thing is really expensive. eBay's a place where it's like, it's $9.99, and if you make it look great, and you know what people want, and you know how to find those people, or, I mean, there's a built-in audience on eBay, which helps. The audience determines the price, and I was like, oh my god, this is so expensive. How, I want to do this. Like, I know where to find vintage. I was wearing vintage, and I thought Hate Street was expensive. And I had my map of thrift stores and a few $100, and I stopped working in that lobby, and I don't know, it's a really long story. I wrote a book about it.
Which you should all, by the way, go out and get.
Wow, I'm going to name it Nasty Gal, and I'm going to be talking about it 9 years later in front of all these beautiful women. Like, no, it was like, I'm going to name it Nasty Gal and try to sell some stuff so I don't have to work in a lobby anymore. And yeah, that's the origin story.
No, it's such an interesting story to hear something like that, because a lot of times you think, oh, was it luck? Was it this eye for fashion that Sophia obviously has? Something that a lot of us don't. So what is it?
What's the secret sauce?
What's the secret?
What's the secret sauce? I mean, I think a lot of it is just being relentless. So for me, I never experienced anything where the results of what I was doing I could immediately see. If I tweaked a photo, or I tweaked the description of something, or and we all do this with Instagram now, and my photo's lighter and it performs better, or, people like pictures of macaroons or whatever, like anything on marble performs well. So, I mean, it's like really easy to tweak out on the internet, but at the time it was still not that. I mean, this is 2006. It wasn't, people weren't starting businesses online the way they are now. And I think it's just with any tool that you have or any framework that you have, which for me it was eBay, I think it's like, how can I hack this? How can I mean, and sometimes you do want to break some of the rules. I added friends on MySpace with like a program that you aren't supposed to be using, but like I don't really care that, you know, it was MySpace. And so I would like go to Nylon Magazine's I had an app, like a program, they weren't even called apps at the time. I think I had like a BlackBerry Pearl, and that was like the most exciting technological advancement of like my life. I would enter like Nylon Magazine, and only women in LA and New York between these ages, and this is something that Facebook has built a bazillion-dollar business doing, which is like lookalikes and targeted, you know, marketing. But I was just like, oh, cool, I know that girls in LA and New York, a lot of stuff ships there, and they're maybe like more attuned to fashion earlier, you know, whatever it is earlier on, and, you know, so you don't always need to follow the rules, but what's the magic? I don't know. I think it's just that I'm competing with myself, and now that I've put something out in the world, I better make it work, because I owe it to my customer, and I owe it to my team, and I owe it to myself, and I owe it to my future. I don't know. I think that's something everyone can do. I'm just, and I also like had a dad that was really hard on me, so I think that helps. I'm not like trying to like impress him or anything, but it's just there's an internal like, not that's never good enough, but just like, you know, restlessness, the voice of like, hurry up, like, why are you behind me on your one speed bike, like, kiddo, like, hurry up, you can't hear, Jesus Christ, is this better,
can our audio person turn up the volume just better? A little bit,
and you can't see me, I know. I could just sit on the edge of the stage.
we could stand up, or is there someone to move this podium? There we go. We're just going to try not to fall off. And then if we do, you might
have to look at you guys.
Well, let's get to how you went from... I'm so personal with everyone now. So you took us
already suffering.
You took it from eBay and then Nasty Gal. Yep. One of the questions that I got from one of my colleagues as you're talking to Sophia, you have to ask her, how did you come up with the name Nasty Gal, first off?
Well, I was thinking of names for my eBay store that was not yet anything, and thought of things like I Heart Vintage. I mean, they're not all winners. You have to like make a list of like, not that that's like the worst, but it's just like not as memorable as Nasty Gal, maybe less polarizing, but you have to make a list of 100 failed choices before you get to something great. And I did that, and you know, the other eBay sellers had names like Mama Stone Vintage and very like hippy dippy, you know, and that's cool. Like I can get into that stuff, but I wanted to do something that kind of stood out. And music is kind of like my first love, like music and photography. I didn't really plan on being in fashion. I love vintage clothing, and I love clothing, and now I love fashion through having been involved with it. But there's an album by a woman named Betty Davis, who was this super outspoken funk singer, songwriter, performer, ex-runway model, ex-wife of Miles Davis. She was allegedly too crazy for him. And she's just like, her spirit is amazing. She has an album called Nasty Gal and a song called Nasty Gal and songs called things like I Don't Want to Love You. So I was just like, you know, I didn't think I was picking a name for a business that I'd be talking about later in life. So I picked Nasty Gal, and somehow it worked.
It seems to have gone with you throughout the business, throughout the career, and it's not just the name of a website. It's really, it's your brand.
Yeah.
It's for all intents and purposes, it's all about being a badass chick.
A girl boss.
A girl boss, which is the title of your book. So how do you incorporate the, not just the name Nasty Gal, but incorporate the idea of Nasty Gal into almost everything, whether it's social media, whether it's your website, whether it's your fashion, whether it's how you look and how you get ready every day, and your book and your radio show?
Yeah. I would say it's hard. So it's easy when you're the one touching everything. And the spirit of the brand, the voice of the brand, the imagery of the brand, all of the things that have made Nasty Gal were very much just a very direct extension of the things I liked and my work in the beginning. And over time, you find that you need a team and you need a talented team. And there's, how do you tell people, like, what's in your head? How do you have them come up with crazy copy ideas instead of write obvious things like, you know, this email blast is on Fleek or something? You know, it's just like, to think outside the box is a really hard thing to teach and train people against, especially when it has to be outside the box, but in this specific way that's too specific to our brand. And so, you know, it's been this thing where if you have conversations with someone on our creative team, and over the course of Nasty Gal's history, it can feel like it's a personal conversation, even though I don't address people like your work is not great. But if I say something's off brand and we don't have a thing that tells them what the brand is, then it's just like a really subjective conversation, even if I am the founder. So I've spent the last like 6 months working on a project with a creative agency out of New York who are really great on getting out of my head the things that make Nasty Gal tick into something that we can have conversations about, into a tool that we can share among our team, that we can train people against. So it's not a conversation about my opinion versus your opinion. It's, this is what we've signed up to do. Are we achieving that? And I think that's really important. So, because it's creative, creatives can be especially like a little emotional, and you just want to set people up for success. But I've learned the hard way, and I'm still learning, that it takes doing a lot of hard work in the background to get it to the point where it can be shared with the team, and then the customer can see it.
Speaking on that note, you talk about creatives and everything. This has been a real pivotal point for Nasty Gal over the last year. You've transitioned out of that CEO role and you've hired on someone else. How important is it to know that you are the creative side? Sometimes there comes a point in your growing business that you have to let someone take over that business aspect. How hard is it, I guess, to say, this is a lot of women deal with this, asking for help?
I'm probably too good at asking for help, to the point of sharing things that, like, I should, you know, it's like I don't keep my cards close enough to my chest, but I also get all kinds of amazing advice all the time. And people actually like being asked for advice. It makes them feel special. So don't be afraid to ask for advice. You know, that was an easy move. It was something I'd been thinking about for a long time. You know, when 8 years prior, my job was, you know, being creative and inventing things, and, you know, a lot of things that some people would think are below them, like editing photos. Like, every single tiny choice that we make, as far as the brand goes, is something that equals what the whole brand is. And I found myself having touch base after touch base after touch base after, you know, looking at goals and deliverables. It just became like really uninspiring, even though I loved my team. I think I'm a starter and I'm an idea starter. I think I need a lot of help to sustain things. There's a lot of patience and repetition and checking back in. And I'm the kind of person that if I say something that, and someone says, okay, yeah, cool, then like it's been heard and it's no problem. But like, leadership is such a nuanced talent that takes time and effort to cultivate, and it's something that that I'm still learning. And I have an incredible CEO who was our president for about a year. She was the chief product officer at Lululemon for 5.5 years. And I worked incredibly well with her. I trust her taste level. She wakes up every day to lead people. And I wanted to put myself in a place where I could build new things, you know, on behalf of the business and focus on what's creative and what's touching the customer. So,
since you stepped away from the CEO role, how much have you changed and how much has the business changed?
I would say the business has changed for the better, because when you have certain teams reporting into one person and other teams reporting into me, it's just different. So to have everyone aligned under one person and who is more organized than me and who will have those meetings to make sure that the things are happening or that are supposed to happen are happening.
Someone cracking the whip.
It's different. Yeah, I'm not... I crack the whip like on a photo shoot. I'm like, how long has lunch been? Come on, guys, whatever. The model's on her phone. What? She's getting paid? Like, whatever. But like the over the course of history, cracking the whip kind of leadership that chops, it's a really different skill set and a way of organizing yourself. So how's the business changed? I would say for the better. The team is clearer on what the task at hand is, but it's a work in progress.
It's kind of like delegating. It's important to have someone to delegate all the different things and for you to delegate the different tasks to everyone. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that people love to be asked advice. Mm-hmm. So I would ask you, what is your advice for, let's start with the young entrepreneur in the room, someone who is just starting out in the business world, someone who is still networking and meeting people and might have this great idea but doesn't really know exactly where to go with that idea. What would be your best advice for them?
I would say, it's so funny to answer a question about advice with a response about advice, but I would say first seek advice and get, like, soak up all you can everywhere you can, and, you know, cultivate a healthy amount of ignorance to the things that you think aren't appropriate to what you're doing. You have to be clear on what it is that you're doing. Otherwise, you're just going to take everyone's advice and get super lost. I would say there's resources out there. Even if it's not something as organized as this, you can go on YouTube and do research to find whatever it is that you want to learn. And like I said kind of earlier at the 10,000 person in the 10,000 person room, you know, having mentors is important, but I also think some people expect this epiphany of mentorship to kind of fall out of the sky. I think we could all be so lucky to have that, but don't wait for things to happen to you. Like, go happen to them, and do everything you can with what you have. We all have a different tool set, and I think the best people and the most successful people take something from over here and something from over there that 99% of the rest of the room would look at and be like, those things have nothing to do with one another. I'm going to go do this here and that there. Like, think about how you can make things radical. And I think that's when innovation happens. And also, it's just really exciting to invent things, so.
What about for someone who's a little bit later on in their career and thinking, I've been in this position that doesn't really make me happy, but it's something that brings in the money, and then they see someone so inspirational as you that's been able to come basically from nothing and turn that into this huge $100 million empire. I know there's no secret sauce or one thing that's going to make you rich, but when you're at that point in your career,
if that's the goal, I would say, you know, it's like I definitely had the privilege of being 22 when I started Nasty Gal, so I'm not like fooled about that. I think when you are young is the prime time. At least you better do it at least then, if not later, in addition to it. But if you haven't done it then you're probably really craving it later on. To take risks and to try different things, because, you know, like I say in Girl Boss, we have to throw ourselves against the wall like a piece of spaghetti to see if we stick to different things. And the things that I've stuck to are not necessarily the things that I really even planned on sticking to, which is really interesting, and it all comes through experimentation. I would say, gosh, if you're making a transition and you've been in a career for a long time, I don't know, at that point, like, I think coaching can be really, really great. I've had some great coaches who have helped me through important transitions in my own career. You probably have more to lose, and that's a great thing. And you will also have a whole lot more experience to take to whatever it is that you do, and probably some fire under your ass to keep paying your mortgage and provide for your kids and do all those things that come with having built meaningful things in your life, which is a great thing. You just have more. But it's something that obviously you have to be more considered about, you know, making a change like that rather than quitting your lobby job at an art school, you know. So I would just say be careful, seek advice. Hopefully you have a great support network. And you know, it's always nice to test things, like see what, if your idea is something that resonates with other people, because the last thing you want to do is like drop everything and then have an idea and not know if it's viable at all and then be, you know, left kind of like, oh shit.
We don't want to be left.
Super inspiring.
But that, it really is a theme of girl boss. Let's talk about that.
Okay.
You went from being a CEO, and then now you're now an author. So in a sense, that was something that you did too. You went and you tried something out to see if it would stick, and it has stuck. You just had the hardcover come out last year. You had the paperback come out recently. You just went on an 11-city tour, got to meet with your girl nation out there. I want to ask you about the title. It can be construed as a little controversial at times. Two different words there. Girl and boss. Mm-hmm. It's okay for a guy to be bossy. It's not always okay for a woman to be bossy. Mm-hmm. When you encounter people who say, you know, why'd you pick girl? Why'd you pick boss? We're not supposed to be perceived that way. What do you say to them?
I think the trick is that words only carry so much weight. So, like, I don't know, the whole bossy thing, I don't really completely get. It's like, I don't, if you're bossy, like, bossy as a characteristic is not, I don't think it's a great thing. I think people should be, as you saw earlier, assertive, and I think we should be clear on who we are and what kind of places we're going to be successful and what resources we need to have that, and, you know, But going around bossing people around is, like, not attractive if you're a man or a woman. It's just like, it's an idea that sits in a silo that is, like, I'm bossy, which I don't really understand that. So I think being a boss and being a girl boss is just about being the boss of your own life. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about managing people or being the boss of other people. That, as an aspiration, for some people who are great at management, that's great. But it doesn't... There should be no ego in managing other people. It's really just about being your best self and waking up every day and knowing yourself well enough to know where you may or may not thrive, but also being brave enough to find those new places where that could be possible. Girl, I don't know. I mean, it's like, yeah, I think it's all in who's using these words. So if some creepy old man says, like, hey, girl, can I have a girl to dinner? It's just like, or like, look at those girls. I don't know. Like, it's just, it's a word. I could say woman boss, but I don't think the book would have sold as well. So if I want to get a message across, I should probably have a good branding. And I think girl boss is just a better name. It's not political at all. And it's not even literal, really. And that's the beauty of inventing your life, is that you know, language is malleable, I think.
When you wrote Girl Boss, obviously you have hundreds of thousands, millions of followers with all the different social media combined. So we know that that was obviously part of your target audience. But who else is Girl Boss written for? Who else should read it? And I know you want to, every author wants to say everyone, but who specifically are we talking about here? Who can benefit from reading it?
I mean, I think everyone. I think anyone who's in transition, and we're all in transition mm-hmm. all the time. The girls that I meet, young and my age and older, are largely in transition, and they've named and claimed it, like, I'm really in transition. And I think that's when girl boss really strikes a chord in your life, where it's like, wow, I'm really unhappy, or oh shit, I got fired, but I read your book and I realized it was that getting fired was the best thing that ever happened to me. So it's like, it's a book that helps you reframe what's going on in your life and kind of find the beauty in it and learn from it. So it's, you know, a lot of it is girls entering college, girls just out of college, and women who are moving from one career to another or from a corporate job into something that is maybe more entrepreneurial. And guys should read it. Like, there's guys tweeting me, like, I'm a dude boss, and I'm like, good for you. But like, a guy who's going to sit and read a pink book with a girl with a haircut on the cover called hashtag girl boss is probably a guy that you want to know. Like, I want to know that guy. Like, he's probably a cool guy.
So you are a girl. You are the girl boss.
I'm trying.
We have, obviously, a lot of younger women in this room, too. We have women of all ages. But for those entering the field, what do you look for when you're hiring someone? What are you looking for in someone out there who's just fresh out of college, let's say?
Yeah. Someone who's hungry, someone who's willing to put in work to prove themselves before they, like, ask for more. So we just had this contest on Instagram that was, like, hashtag girl boss moments, and I think this is just a great example of that. This girl was an intern. She had an idea that became a national campaign for her company as an intern, and she might have been recognized a little for it, but at the end of her internship, no one was really extending a permanent offer to her, and she went out and she said, hey, like, this is what I did. Like, I think I belong here. And sometimes it's a bummer when people don't recognize what you've done, but there's so much going on in everyone's worlds that you should just assume that you're appreciated, and if someone forgets, then you're just like, hey, I'm valuable, you know? So I think that's important. But when I meet people, I like curious people. So if I'm interviewing you and I say, like, what questions do you have for me? What can I answer for you? And someone says, like, nope, I'm good. Like, I know this is right. And I'm just like, wow, you know, because there's so much that is unknown when you go into a new role. I like curious people, even if it's like, what do you do on the weekends? I'll be like, okay, you know, cool.
Ask that question.
I don't do really much, actually. I try not to. I try really hard not to. What else? Someone who's eager. So if someone like, this whole thing is just kind of like, you know, how many interviews have you had this week? Or just like how confident, I think being confident is important, but like being overconfident and scary. There's such nuances in how you can present yourself. Chewing gum is not good. What else? I mean, I look for people who are interested in the role for the right reason. Not like, I think this would be a really great start to, but, you know, I want to be in marketing in 6 months, but this is like a totally different job. It's like, I want to be in a venture-backed, female-run company. That's cool, but actually the job is this other thing, and that's what you're going to show up and do every day. So you can't just show up to work after we've hired you and be like, I'm in a venture-backed, women-run company. Like, you know, someone being able to articulate why they're excited about the role and what they can do in that specific position, I think, is really important.
Yeah, so talking about the job interview, I've heard that you've said one of your favorite questions is, what's your biggest weakness and what's your biggest strength? Mm-hmm. Which I think we've all been asked that on a job interview.
I know.
It was so hard to answer.
I'm not so unconventional that I'll, like, not ask questions like that. But I think it's important because a lot of people will say, like, you know, they're not comfortable saying, like, well, I really need to work on this thing.
So what are yours then?
Okay, yeah. My weakness is being on time, like, hands down. I'm just, it's insane. Like, it's so insane that I accomplished anything. Like, anything. I mean, and it's good that I worked alone in a bathrobe for the first, like, year and a half of this business, because no one was waiting for me anyway, yeah, whatever. And that the nature of selling online is like, oh shit, I have to restock the store. There's just like other things that motivate you that aren't like, oh, better write a new song today? It's just so different than just creating out of the blue. So I had the framework of eBay, which helped. Weakness, that's my weakness. I could go on all day with weaknesses. Pick my face. No. Strengths. What's my strength? I think it's just like wacky, like just like spitballing crazy shit and getting excited about it and actually having the balls to possibly do it.
So basically being excited about it.
So like, you know, we're gonna launch Bridal, huh? We're gonna launch Bridal. Or like some bridal stuff, because I was like, I'm getting married, let's make some dresses, and then it's all very natural in that way. And it's like, why don't we set up a chapel and like have a rack of dresses and have hair and makeup and have a photographer and launch Bridal and I'll get ordained and I'll just go marry people in like a weird pop-up in Beverly Hills. Don't steal my idea. It's coming soon. But you have to come to Beverly Hills. But like, that's so absurd, you know, and you can't pay an agency to... You can, but it's rare that ideas are like that stupid that, you know, it's the dumbest ideas that are the most brilliant. So I think my strength is that I'm dumb.
I would say risk taker. I think that's the best. When you're in the job and if you don't say my biggest strength is that I'm dumb. It's not dumb, I'm risk taker. Well, great. It's so been good chatting with you. And you just mentioned you're going doing Bridal. What else is next for Nasty Gal?
Oh, gosh. We have a big collaboration that's hitting in January with a 90s rock icon who's maybe never done a collaboration before, and it's so exciting. I don't know. All the new places that you can take a brand, so whether... And there's nothing on the calendar for cosmetics or fragrances or handbags or eyewear or... But it's just like, what can I do with the Nasty Gal brand to have things that live in the world that, you know, any girl can put on and feel better about her day? It's not a vapid thing. Getting dressed is not a vapid thing. Fashion, I don't love the word fashion, but I think style is an important thing, so... How can I connect Girl Boss and the message of Girl Boss with the business that is Nasty Gal? That's my Pepsi challenge.
Awesome. Well, I'm not sure how much time we have, but we're going to open it up to some questions from the audience. If anyone has any questions.
Okay, great.
And we've got microphones on each side. So you right over here. You want to go over to the microphone over there? That way we can hear your question.
We were told you knew the drill, so...
You guys knew the drill. So we'll start over here. We'll take turns on each side. So you want that one. So just stand at the mic. Yeah. Go ahead and ask your question first.
So you've grown to millions of followers on social media, but when you first got started, how do you kind of spark the interest to get that momentum?
Well, I just... Well, for me, on MySpace, I just added friends. And you do see people on Instagram, like, you know, following and then, like, commenting. And there's ways of doing it where it's a little annoying, but you're still building brand awareness for free. And I think there's ways of doing that subtly without being, like, in one capital letter and one lowercase letter and one capital letter and one lowercase letter, like, come check out my page or whatever. So... I would just say, like, you know, be creative with your use of social media. Don't spam people, but, like, you can go proactively and find them. And then, you know, finding them is only part of it. You want to have something beautiful, interesting, unique, of substance that, like, when they do say, like, who's this person commenting on my Instagram, they're like, oh, this seems cool. You know, so have something that you're proud of. So they want to follow you. Yeah.
Thank you.
What's your next question?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
So first I just want to say I got laid off a week after I finished your book, and I'm so glad it was such good timing. I'm in political communications.
Cool.
And so my question for you is, you're pretty notoriously uncensored, and there are some people who are also notoriously uncensored and in politics, and they might be capturing a lot of attention.
Uh-huh.
But obviously in my job I have to be very careful about how I use my words. And you can give me some advice about how you capture some people's attention, and maybe if there's a shit or a fuck thrown in every once in a while.
I would say if you're working where you're working, unless you're like having a casual time with someone, avoid the shits and fucks. And I'm like, that's coming from me. I have a friend who worked at, what was it called? It had the weirdest name. It was in New York. It was a political PR firm. And I think it's actually such a cool... Anyway, I guess I could just talk about your job, but it's such a cool talent to have, because the people who are in political public relations go into brand stuff or other stuff, and they just have such an incredible skill set. It just seems like they're the best people in publicity, so I would say that's a good place to be, because you have to be really buttoned up and you have to be strategic, which is something that is unfortunately difficult to find in fashion PR. But I would say, limit your words, and keep things close to your chest, and learn from the people around you, the best people. If you say something like, "Hey, what do you think about this controversial thing? That was lame, right?" The best people I know, and I'm not this person, I want to be this person, they just let anything negative just like fall to the ground. They just like... they're not rude about ignoring it, but they just like won't engage. I think that's like a really, really cool thing. But how do you make noise? I don't know. I feel I have something to say, I guess. Have something to say and say it over and over again until somebody listens.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Your question?
Hi, Sophia.
Hi.
My name is Sophia. I just wanted to say, first of all, I'm so excited. I stumbled across your book a few weeks ago already, in like 3 days, and when
cool.
I was speaking here, I was like, yes. So my question for you is, early on, how did you kind of feel like let yourself realize your accomplishments? Because for me, I'm chasing a dream in music, and I'm an unsigned artist, so a lot of times when I create things, it's a little difficult to be like, boom, you're like making progress, So how did you do that kind of early on when you started to realize, like, I'm kind of onto something?
I think, I kind of mentioned earlier, because my husband's, like, a songwriter, and he's at home, like, recording stuff, and, like, it's, you don't have, like, the, oh, this has to happen this week because I sold it, now I have to ship it, and there's just that whole thing is a lot easier than what you're doing. I would say just look for cues, whether it's someone taking interest in what you're doing or just the smallest acts of appreciation for what you're doing mean you're going in the right direction. But in terms of organizing yourself, there's a really great app called Wunderlist, with a W-U-N-D-R. I just like set goals for yourself and like reward yourself. I'm actually, it's like it seems really cheap, but like my parents let me homeschool my senior year because I got good grades my, junior year, and like that kind of stuff really works. So just be like, I want, and it's not about consumerism or stuff, but if there's something that you want, or if you can reward yourself in any small way and tie that back to what you want to accomplish, I think that helps a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Hi.
Hey.
My name is Al, and I too have a dad who really
at rehab. At rehab, I know, like, hi, Al.
I have a dad too who's always like, on my blood, how I have to chase my dreams and stuff. And I'm planning,
good.
I'm going to college, and I'm planning on working in a setting that's kind of like, sit down, get it done, stay after hours to make yourself known. But at the same time, like, I'm not really the kind of person who can sit down at a desk and like focus. So my dad was like, dude, Al, you have to do something that you're happy with doing, and I'm not happy sitting at a desk. So say I find myself in a situation where I like what I'm doing, but I'm in a boring office environment, how can I like spice it up for not only me, but maybe everyone?
Well, it sounds like, are you in a job that you want to be in?
Yeah, it's like, okay, I'm an economics major, so I work in like the banking, but that's always boring. So I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I would just say, like, be silly and, you know, sometimes, like, the silly idea is the one that becomes, a real campaign. So I think we're running out of time.
Yeah, I think that's that. I got a five-minute
cue. Be silly. I think you can get away with that in the office. Let's do one more question.
Yeah, one more question. Let's put it this way. We've got 5 more minutes, so.
Okay.
We have 2 factories.
Wow.
We specialize in laundry.
Cool.
So it's specifically laundry as well. I'm just curious if you'd be interested in working with me.
Business pitch.
Yeah, just come give you your business card right now.
Thank you so
cool.
much.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. Thank you guys so much for being here. Thank you, Sophia. I'm going to go book signing.
I'm going to go sign books.
Yeah, I will see you
there.